Hey, Dio.
Hey, how are you today, sir?
All right, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. We're warm here in Tucson.
that's right.
Yes, it never stops being summer here. We have 2 weeks of winter, and that's it.
I don't know. When I think of Tucson, I do think arid.
Right.
I think of it as having a nice college town element to it.
Yes.
And I think scorpions and rattlesnakes.
Well, you pretty much nailed it. You forgot to say there's tons of Soundgarden fans here.
Excellent. You know, I don't think we've ever played Tucson. We've played Phoenix a lot.
Yeah. In fact, I saw you guys. I want to say this was 91. You guys were opening for Guns N' Roses on the Illusion Tour.
And that would have been outside of Phoenix, right?
Right. Yeah. It was called the Compton Terrace. It was this big bowl alongside the highway.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I think Guns N' Roses tried. It was like end of tour. They tried to haze us. Did they come out wrapped up in towels or robes?
Yeah, they had some plastic sex dolls coming out.
Yeah. And I think they came out to kind of prank us at the end of the tour. And I think Chris yanked some of their towels off.
Yeah, because he's that type of guy.
Yeah, I think he had some naked GNR guys on stage, and I believe I saved one of those inflatable sex dolls.
Well, hey, you never know when they can come in handy, so.
It doesn't work. It's just a souvenir.
Well, hey, man, it's so awesome to talk to you. Like I said, you're kind of part of my youth. I remember watching you guys on MTV. I'm seeing Outshined on Headbangers Ball.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I was part of my youth, too.
Yeah. Yeah, me and you are probably around the same age here. Now, like, you guys at the time, like, the record companies didn't really kind of know what to do with you. You were technically considered at that time, like, heavy metal. Grunge really hadn't happened yet. Did you guys, like, feel that it was weird that they were trying to put you in a box at that time?
Yeah, we weren't too happy about that, but there wasn't much choice. I mean, the bands that sounded like us didn't become huge until Nirvana broke through.
Right.
So until then, record companies thought, well, they're kind of heavy, so we'll put them with heavy metal. You know, we'll that's how the marketers tried that, and journalists. It's like, well, we're not. We don't have some, you know, socially and culturally, there are too many aspects of what was popular heavy metal in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Very little of it that we shared with them. I mean, the other social behaviors, the look, the only thing culturally that we shared with them is that we're basically doing music that has appeal to young suburban folks and maybe a little bit more guys than girls, you know, but more young than old and more probably, you know, that's the target demographic. Certainly more American than Asian, I suppose.
Right, exactly.
Just culturally, you know, because we're an American band. I mean, and so, but I've come to learn later, of course, that we also did well in Japan, and we have big fans in India, which from what I hear from relatives. So
I think any band that gets signed at any point can always fall back on, we're huge in Japan.
Yeah, I think that was a line in Spinal Tap.
I think so. Now, so you know, yeah, at that time, you know, you're out with Guns N' Roses because they were probably of the heavy metal bands. They were the most akin to you. They were a little more raw than like the Warrants of the world and that kind of stuff.
Well, this is, you know, you're nailing it. This is exactly what we thought about. I mean, we would love the Ramones. Perhaps we could have opened up the Ramones. We would end up meeting the Ramones a few years later.
Right.
But at that time, we were probably a little bit bigger than them in terms of a draw, a mm-hmm. live draw, at the time that we met them, because we eventually toured with them. They, in Australia's version of Lollapalooza, which I believe is called the Big Day Out, yes.
Right. And didn't you guys played Lollapalooza with them here in the States,
96,
too.
Yes, 96. Also with Metallica.
Right. And so, I remember seeing that show again in that Dust Bowl along I-10.
Yes. Yes. So around that time, 91, we were fans of Metallica. We were fans of a lot of punk rock and indie and underground bands, which just we weren't going to open up for, you know, bands like Black Flag or Husker Du. these are guys that, you know, maybe we could open up for playing, you know, a small club in Seattle.
Right.
But as we were getting bigger, we thought, well, who would we pair with? And we thought, you know, I guess Metallica, you know, maybe if AC/DC were to do a tour and they were at all aware of us, because we weren't that big. We were maybe too small to be on their radar.
Right.
The guys in Metallica knew us. We knew them. Faith No More was another one. We were about the same stature at the time, you know, Faith No More. And we did tour with them around 90. So it was a tough move.
Right.
There wasn't much we could do, so the people kind of, the record company and some journalists tried to ghettoize us with metal, but we didn't identify with metal, even though we saw ourselves as being, you know, a heavy band, certainly. You know, musically, we use other elements. Culturally, we had a different, came from a different social place. But Nirvana breaking through really changed that. Then later you have Pearl Jam and Alice and us and the, you know, Chili Peppers, Ministry, so many bands doing well that really created opportunities for, you know, for us.
Well, yeah, you were talking about that. So, yeah, at that time, though, I mean, what was it like to go on tour with Guns N' Roses or do Lollapalooza with Pearl Jam and the Chili Peppers? I mean, was it just like everything you always hoped it would be?
Well, you know, we also toured Skid Row at that time, and that might give a better example of a difference in audience than Guns N' Roses.
Sure.
Guns N' Roses was so huge. We were playing with them in Europe or the U.S. There are a lot of people who, a lot of their audience really, they're busy doing something else. They might be busy with their job or their truck or their girlfriend or something.
Right.
Or their kids, you know. But the girls and guys who like Guns N' Roses are getting them from the radio and MTV, and we're not getting a lot of radio and MTV. So to them, if their big pursuit isn't music, then they have no idea of who we are.
Right.
Probably don't care because they're busy with their jobs and their kids and their.
Right. It wasn't presented to them on a silver platter.
Yeah, and so they don't know what to think. They have no reference point that would tell them that it was great, like radio or MTV. So that was a little bit tough. But they're definitely, you get some young guys in the front rows who are into bands, and they might be in a band themselves, and those guys knew what we were about, and you'd see the Soundgarden t-shirt. With Skid Row, it's a little bit tougher because they were a really talented band that was underrated as a metal band because they had some great players, and they're remembered for some of their kind of poppy stuff.
Right.
They get the girls in the front row.
Mm-hmm. You
know, done-up girls who want to see the handsome, good-looking guys in Skid Row. But we come up there first to play, you know, with our ripped-up clothes or whatever and our unshaven. And we start playing, and quickly a mosh pit starts, and the girls waiting to see the cute guys kind of get pushed to the back, and the guys with the ripped-up denim jackets come up to the front and start, you know, getting into us, you know, getting into Soundgarden.
So you were converting those audiences into tastemakers. Like, this is their first experience, and then, hey, this is something brand new, and now you're going to put that in the big pot and mix it up and see what comes out.
That's the best we could do. We're doing what we do. We're playing the music we write, and there are going to be people there who know what that's about, and we're going to play for them, and that's the best you can do. And you play for the people who haven't heard from you or heard of you, and you hope that this is what we're about. You know, you dig it or you don't. But there's a definite quick demographic change in the first three or four rows once we started playing.
Well, okay, so let's go back to that time, too. So we're talking like 1991. You guys already had a couple albums out. Bad Motor Finger was your third, like, regular album release.
Our third full length.
Yeah.
We considered it our fourth album. You know, our Sub Pop record was our debut, you know.
Right. And I was going to say, so, like, the way that the music industry is now, did that kind of, you know, that time period, did that kind of prepare you for what's currently going on in the music business?
Wow. I don't think so.
No, you couldn't see this coming, right?
No, I mean, I think I still had a pretty sizable vinyl collection. I was very slowly converting my collection over to CDs, and I guess So I think, yeah, that's definitely different. Well, this Bad Motor Finger 25th anniversary, the Super Deluxe Box, we have two DVDs in the collection.
Wow.
One of them is the first time, well, they're both first time releases. Mm-hmm. But one is the first time on DVD of something we put out in 91 called Motor Vision, which came out on VHS.
I remember renting those things at the store. There was actually a place, like a section in the video store, if people even remember what video stores are. There was a music video section, and you can go and get your favorite concert from your favorite
that's
band.
That's right. And you can buy this at a Tower.
Right.
People remember Tower.
Yeah.
Record companies made these. You know, they made these like either electronic press kits or like VHS tapes of live footage and interviews to help promote, you know, their bands. And you can go buy them at the record store. Well, we did. We made one, and that it's never come out on DVD. We should have put it out on DVD 10 years ago when DVD sales were big, but we weren't a band, and we didn't have management or a record company. So,
right.
But this Motor Vision's out on DVD for the first time, so that's a big deal to me because I don't know where my VHS copy is.
They're collecting dust. Yeah, they're collecting dust in the closet. You know
exactly.
Where they are. But yeah, so you've got the DVDs. Now there's also a full length concert from the Paramount, right?
Yes, live at the Paramount, 19 songs, and that's put out on both DVD, high def, and Lear's high def, and two CDs. So there's three discs dedicated to Soundgarden live at the Paramount. So that's a pretty cool trip.
Yeah, I mean, then there's outtakes too, and some demos with the
There's some live stuff. There's some there's outtakes of I think most of the tracks in the album have some outtake versions, maybe 2/3 of them. And there's a 5.1 surround sound Blu-ray audio that accompanied. Every track is accompanied with visuals, sort of a animated. Visual stuff that created by Josh Graham, who's been doing a lot of our art direction for the past 7 years, you know, from album cover art to a couple videos and some stage production. He came up with this really cool imagery, different stuff for each song. They're not videos, but they're not pictures. They're kind of like it's trippy. I think if there are people who like imbibing in certain substances, they have a home theater, the 5-point surround sound audio with the video that Josh came up with. I think that's going to do you really nice.
Right. If you set the speakers up at just the right angles.
That's right. Yeah, if you set it at just the right angle, you hear all the backwards stuff we put on.
Ooh. So, you know, you guys haven't had a studio release since 2012. I know you guys put out that Rarities thing in 2014, Echo of Miles, but what's going on with Soundgarden outside of the reissue of Bad Motor Finger? Because Chris, you know, he did his solo stuff last year. He's got the Temple of the Dog thing coming up with the tour.
A lot of solo stuff, and Matt's been doing Pearl Jam, and now kind of Pearl Jam and Chris's solo stuff are kind of coming together with this Temple thing. What are they doing, like a half dozen shows later this month?
Right, yep. I think the 14th is their first one.
Yes. And once you know, this in between these other tours, these other commitments, we've gotten together and just jam and visit and do some songwriting and share demos with each other. And we've had three different week-long sessions in the past year. Maybe they should have been 6 or 7 of those sessions.
But right.
These guys have been busy, you know, with their tours. So I'm busy doing the catalog stuff and helping coordinate and supervise the artwork and the track listings for that stuff. So now, probably maybe around the holidays, maybe we'll do a week or so, or maybe after the holidays, we'll do a couple weeks, finish writing. We've probably got a good dozen ideas, probably 6 pretty solid and 6 that are in development, and we're probably going to work on some more ideas. We like to come up with, you know, a few dozen ideas and see how they develop before we get to an album. That's why probably every time we release a new studio, you know, release,
right,
they're all going to be double vinyl records. I mean, Bad Motor Finger is our last single disc. I mean, Super Unknown, Down the Upside, they're all double vinyl. King Animal, we probably could have squeezed a few more songs in there, but I think there's definitely a double vinyl version of that. So, you know, I think everything we do is going to be that way. Four songwriters, a little bit of time in between albums. Maybe we'll do a triple album.
Hopefully. Yes, I think that's the only frontier you really haven't covered, maybe a quadruple.
It'll have to be a quadruple because Echo Miles was a triple album.
That's right. So there you go. So see, now you've really got to one up yourself each time you get out there. People are going to be like, "Hey, come on, three? That's all you got?"
Exactly, like Rick Nielsen's five neck guitar, right?
Right.
Just outdo Jimmy Page's double neck. Well, that's the thing. So that's the crazy thing about Echo Miles. It's a three albums, but vinyl. It was six discs. Vinyl.
Yeah. Wow.
So but every Soundgarden record is probably going to be double vinyl because we can't release, you know, less than, you know, 13, 14, 15 songs.
So, like, when you were talking about converting all of your albums to CD at the time, did you ever finish that project?
I think all our albums are out on CD. Oh, the library.
Yes.
You know, it's been a lengthy process, and it's difficult because I have some pretty obscure punk rock records and some, you know, a few indie records from the 60s that never came out on CD. Or some of them have eventually come out on CD, but they're hard to find. So it's not likely that I can complete that library on CD.
Mm-hmm.
There's indie records that were put out on indie labels that are, the labels are defunct, the band's defunct, so the idea that it'll eventually come out on CD requires perhaps someone like me to go and invest and try to collect some of these old masters and put them out.
Well, you seem like you're a curator, so that sounds like you're up to the task.
Yeah, maybe in the future. Get all the old blues and punk rock records that only came out on vinyl or EP.
Well, awesome. And will we see Soundgarden on stage here possibly 2017?
Oh, I think definitely in 2017 we'll be doing something, yeah.
All right, so there you go. You heard it here first, straight out of Kim Thayil's mouth. It's gospel now. All right. Well, hey, Kim, I really appreciate you chiming in and letting us know what's up with the 25th year reissue of Bad Motor Finger. And we'll look for it here, I guess, very soon. Where can we get it?
Where can we get Bad Motor Finger? I don't know. They used to have record stores.
Yeah. I guess we can download it. I can't download a piece of vinyl.
Yeah. And it is coming out in vinyl, CD, and it'll be digital download as well.
All right.
And DVDs.
Yeah, got to get it all. Multimedia experience from Soundgarden.
Yes. Get your home theater going.
Man Cave needs some Soundgarden.
There you go. Soundgarden and some beer and some black light posters.
All right, Kim, thank you so much.
Thanks, Dino.
Hey.